come back for the second. India have won the test match. India have won the series. They're going to get back for two. India are home. Lords goes.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of 81 All Out Podcast. This is Mahesh, your host for today's show. So we just did a rewind to India's tour of Australia 1981 as part of this season of cricket coverage. Now we are back in contemporary times. We want to preview the upcoming test series, which has so many moving pieces that we are struggling to keep track of. But in any case, we just thought we'll try and make sense of it as much as we could. So to talk about it, I've got two fellow cricket fans with me, both from Melbourne, hardly few meters apart at the moment. Anantha Subramaniam from Melbourne, who's a cricket fan who works in IT in Melbourne and very, very happy to be in Australia, primarily to watch cricket and also to work. Welcome, Anant.
Thank you. Thank you, Mahesh. Absolute pleasure to be here.
Good. And we have our, I wouldn't say regular, but we've had Rav before. Rav from Cricvestigate, the man whose love affair for sobers knows no limits and a pure play cricket geek. Welcome, Rav. Welcome back to 81 All Out.
Thanks, Mahesh. It's nice to be back again. I promise not to talk about sobers in India-Australia series.
It's okay. I'm sure you'll find an angle. Is there a day in your life that you go without talking about sobers?
There might be times that, yeah, I don't see any fellow cricket fans, but I do still watch some sobers highlights. So I would say no.
Fair enough. Okay, so let's talk about, I mean, before we get talking about the test series, I want to talk about a little bit about coming into the series. What do you feel about the series? Because I remember when West Indies went to England, and that was pretty much the first sort of cricket series post COVID, so to say. And there were conflicting reactions, you know, the society is suffering. Is this the time to play cricket? But at the same time, for people like us, whose lives are pretty much driven by, you know, the center, cricket is the central part of life. It was also a much needed relief in an otherwise traumatic year, so to say, very, very suffocating year. So how does it work now? How do you see this series? Is it one of those temporary relief, or you've learned to live with COVID and this is life in the new normal as it's been abused? How are you looking forward to the series? Give us a sense. Anant, you can get started.
Every India-Australia series is something that we can look forward to because of the way India have played in Australia of late. Of course, there's this 2011-12 series and then the 2014 series, which we lost really badly. But apart from that, there's been a competitive edge to some of these games here. And the fact that we won last time, there was a lot of reason to look forward to until, of course, Virat Kohli pulled out for the last three tests and the fact that Rohit Sharma never even reached Australia. So what started as something that I really expected and anticipated it to be a great one, especially with the day and night test also to happen. There was so much to look forward to, but with some of India's key batsmen out, there's a bit of trepidation is what I would say about how this series might go.
Rav, how much are you looking forward to cricket summer after an absolute abomination of a year?
Oh, very much so. I haven't really bought my tickets for the Boxing Day test yet, but I'm still coming to terms with a bit of normalcy after being in lockdown for months, although we haven't had any cases for nearly 5-6 weeks, I think. I'm really looking forward to it, although unfortunately there are some key players missing from either side, and obviously Virat Kohli missing the last three tests as well. But it's still going to be a really good series, I think. I can't really wait for the day and night test match and finally get to see India at the Gabba, which we haven't in a while.
I know, which was also a point of contention when Tim Payne raised it in one of the press conferences, although it was due to Cricket Australia's own sort of scheduling constraints. But the fact that they're playing at Gabba is also good. Perhaps ideally first test, but any test at Gabba is good.
Absolutely.
Okay, so talking of Kohli, I also wanted to get a sense of that from both of you, given both of you live there and you're consuming the local media, local newspapers, whatever. Daniel Bretig in Cricinfo has written quite a bit about how much Kohli will be missed in the series. And he, in fact, went all the way back to 1930s when Don Bradman missed a series to South Africa. And he was drawing parallel to the fact that this is probably as big as that, if not bigger. I'm not sure how it is seen in India, to be honest. Of course, Kohli missing is a big thing. But I'm not sure if Kohli playing is as commercially critical for some of the Indian business as it is for Cricket Australia at the moment. Is that the reason why it's being spoken of as much as it is? Or is there a genuine feeling that you're missing out, the country is going to miss out on watching this great battle?
Well, I think Kohli's commercial value is massive, and that is what Cricket Australia is riding on. I mean, there's no denial of that fact. Of course, he's been a really successful batsman all around and as a all-format player. But his presence as just the value that he adds commercially for people to look at. It happened even with the fact that Foxtel started to sell it in such a way that it's a subscription. It's pay by subscription only behind paywall. And they had even promoted the fact that you could only see Virat Kohli this summer in Fox as much as you can. And there's no other place that you can. And it went so much that Channel 7 have also filed a suit against Cricket Australia because there's so much of changes that happened to the schedule. And there was possibility if the schedule was as planned, then Kohli might have played a few test matches before the limited overs. And hence Channel 7 might have had some fair share of their revenue. So there you go.
I haven't really been keeping up to date with the Channel 7 Foxtel issue, but I do think that online, especially on Twitter and things, where it has been talked about a bit too much than I think I hear around the local public. And there is genuine excitement about having cricket, and it wasn't really focused on Kohli as much as you see on the newspapers and here on especially Fox Cricket. But yeah, there's a genuine excitement about the actual cricket, and everyone's looking forward to it, especially since the last series also didn't feature Smith and Warner, but it still was a pretty decent team that lost to India. I guess this series would be missing more players than last series, but not having had any cricket for a year, and especially Test cricket, so... yeah, there's definitely some genuine interest in it.
Yeah, so Cricket Australia, in fact, Foxtel, if I might add, right, were so desperate for a really good Kohli knock that every other game that India played and Kohli played, like, they were just upping him, saying that this is the game where Kohli is going to come good. And it eventually happened in the final T20 where he scored some runs. Apart from that, it was a damn squib, I would say, probably for Cricket Australia, that he didn't have an ODI 100, even though they had to chase big scores.
Yeah, that's the surprising part, right? Australia usually, as a country, tries to be intimidating to the main opponent, for instance, particularly the captain. Perhaps Sachin was an exception where they were pretty effusive in their praise, but they were never in awe of him in to the extent that they seem to be of Kohli. For instance, someone like Justin Langer, with a Stephen Smith on his side, keeps repeating his opinion that, you know, Kohli is probably the best batsman he's ever seen, which seems to run contrary to, you know, some of his recent performances. Even last Test series, he didn't set the world on fire, although he played the best innings of the summer in Perth. Even in the home series before that, he wasn't particularly great. So is this the aura of Kohli purely cricketing thing, or is it more commercial sort of aura which also gets translated into cricket? Because I find it ludicrous that Australian commentators keep talking so highly of Kohli while talking of Stephen Smith as just another sort of batsman. How do you make sense of this rap, particularly as a fan of Stephen Smith? Do you find it hard to make sense of?
I'm not sure. Like, most Australians tend to rate players who are a bit more classical, and it's probably one of the things why Kerry O'Keefe, he often keeps bringing that up. Every time you ask him who's the best batsman in the world, he would say Virat Kohli, because according to him, and which is, you know, fairly accurate, he says that because Kohli is such a classical player, and whereas he never really, I don't think he stated it out that Steve Smith is not, but he always meant that part. So maybe it's not just about numbers and situations. It's about how they score the runs. Maybe that has some sort of appeal to it. He's really into, you know, Coley's style of batting. And then that's probably the main reason, I would say. Because, you know, statistically and in terms of all other things, especially in Test cricket, Steve Smith is ahead of Coley, I would say.
Fair enough. I think, we just spoke about Coley because everyone is talking about Coley. So we wanted some people to hold on to listen to our posture. So we'll move on to the real series now. One of the things that kind of I find pretty odd to make sense of coming into the series is that, one, we've not had any real Test cricket for both nations for nearly a year. And you go back one summer back, before that, we just had an Indian team winning in Australia. So is there some sense of fatigue in terms of India-Australia rivalry itself, particularly? I mean, two back-to-back series in a span of 2 years seems, for whatever logistical reasons, seems a bit of an overkill. Does that play a part in how you look forward to the series? Is there a sense of fatigue?
I actually felt that this series is going to be a big one when it was announced, primarily because of what Australia missed in the last summer when they played. I thought Bumrah and Shami versus Smith and Labuschagne would be a riveting watch, which would anyway be a part of the scripts this time around. And also the fact that you had the Indian top Indian batsman like Rohit Sharma coming of age since the last time he was here. So with Rohit Sharma on top, along with Virat Kohli, and the fact that Pujara made some runs last time, giving him some confidence, I was actually looking forward to a meaty contest between the two sides, and it was not too much of a fatigue as such. And in fact, both sides have it's been a while that both sides have also played Test cricket, which means there was more to look forward to with two full strength sides. But unfortunately, with things going the way it has, no one's sure as to who's going to be in the first 11 for the first Test match.
Yeah, I don't think there is any fatigue of any sort, because I think both sides are pretty motivated for two reasons. Well, Australia lost for the first time in Australia, so they want to win it back. And at the same time, you know, there are some sections that say that missing Steve Smith and Warner played a part. So India would want to prove that, you know, that wasn't really a factor. I mean, like, that wouldn't have made a difference to the outcome. So both sides would be keen to prove that. So I think there's a lot to play for. And obviously the World Test Championship is on the line as well. I think I haven't really looked up the points table, but the winner would most likely go through, I think.
Okay, kicking off the Test series with a day-night test, which, you know, probably a year back would have been impossible given, you know, BCCI's reluctance to play day-night tests, and to kind of turn it around so quickly, you know, with Calcutta getting to host day-night test, pretty much, you know, once Ganguly became the president of BCCI, and for BCCI to kind of agree. While it's great commercially, while it's great to watch on TV, is that too much of a gamble for India to take for the sake of for commercial interest, particularly given now that we know it's going to be the only test that Kohli is going to play, and it's also the first test of the series, plus Ishan Sharma is not going to play the series, but earlier it was thought he might join for the later part of the series. Just the way things have shaped out since agreeing to play the day-night test, does that give a decent advantage to Australia, given they have better experience of playing in day-night Test cricket format?
I mean, yeah, even before India accepting for this for the day-night Test to be played in Adelaide, right? I mean, Australia always had a hands-down advantage of playing Test match, day-night Test matches, many more, and they've not lost day-night Test. And the fact that they've played a few in Adelaide gives them a lot of advantage going forward, but there had to be some time when India would have had to embrace this format. And considering where we are, I'd be happy that at least Virat Kohli is there for the pink ball Test match. I'm not sure how much of a difference that is going to make, considering it's a team game and there's there are others who are still on the in trying to understand and get to know their own game, like the likes of the young batsmen around. So at least the fact that Kohli is around, that gives a reasonable chance to even look forward to with respect to the Adelaide Test match. But that apart, definitely Australia will start favourites.
Yeah, it's true. Australia, having played I think 4 Test matches in Adelaide, they definitely have an upper hand. But you know, it's worth noting that Steve Smith's highest score in those 4 Test matches is 59, I think. So he's averaging like 35. Obviously, Warner's 335 helped with this average. Australians haven't really scored that heavily besides the last summer's couple of Test matches, one in Adelaide. And obviously, Marnus has made 100 as well. I don't know. I think despite the fact that Australia have more experience, I still think that Indian pace attack, when fit and, you know, in form, will have the advantage of the moving ball, whether through the air or off the pitch. So it could be a really good contest. And I think we were at Kohli at 136 or something in the only Test he played. So it'll be interesting to see. Although Australia is favourites on paper, I would think it's going to be a closer contest than maybe most people think.
How much of a dent is it for India's chances that Ishan Sharma is not around? I know people talk about Rohit Sharma, people talk about Virat Kohli not being there for the last 3 tests. But how significant is the absence of Ishan Sharma, given that he brings in so much control to the attack as a third seamer?
I think it plays a big part because, we don't know what the lineup is going to be for Australian top order. But if they end up playing Marcus Harris, obviously Travis Head is a definite, and Matty Wade, so that's 3 left-handers in the top 6. And Ishan Sharma, I don't know off the top of my head, but, you know, has pretty good record against the left-handers. And even Jasprit Bumrah, his average against right-handers is like 17. Against left-handers, it's like 25. So, and also I don't think like Bumrah didn't dismiss Khawaja in the last series. I don't think he did as well against the lefties off the top of my head. So I think that's a big part with Ishan Sharma. And also missing a key bowler, considering there are only 4 frontline bowlers in most cases, is a bigger factor than missing a frontline batsman.
Yeah, I mean, Ishan's massive because if you think, just go back to the Wellington Test that India played recently, right? He picked his 5-4, and it was on the back of a story where he was unfit and he was having a bout of fever, if I'm not wrong. And then he comes up, turns up, picks up 5-4 at Wellington. So, and this is in a game where India are bowling on a really good pitch, and Bumrah and Shami didn't do much in the first innings, and Ishant was all over with really good bowling, the Kiwi side, and he got 5 wickets there. So Ishant will be massively missed, and I can't believe that we're saying that considering watching Ishant since 2008 or so. He's improved massively. His recent tours to Australia and New Zealand are testimony to that.
Which brings us to the next question. Who will be the third seamer for India? Is it as is being widely ridiculed on social media at the moment, as Ravi Shastri casually seems to have said to Chapley, that Umesh is the lock-in for the third seamer, which, I mean, it's not even a secret. It makes sense, and it is a fairly casual thing to say. So I don't think it's worthy of all the noise around it. But is that a lock-in given, for instance, he didn't particularly bowl well in Perth when he got the opportunity last series? And typically, he tends to be a much better bowler at home than away. I mean, whatever record that I've mentioned since 2017, a lot of it is also some superlative performance at home, particularly for Umesh. Is that a certain lock-in, or would India be looking at trying a new third seamer option?
I can't really see going with anyone else. Well, obviously, what Ravi Shastri said to Ian Chappell. But yeah, I think the conditions may be different. But he's done really well in most opportunities he got in the last 3 or 4. And I think you have to reward form. I haven't seen how he bowled in the tour game, but I think he's pretty much a certainty. But, you know, you can never be sure.
I mean, yeah. Umesh was the pick of the bowlers in that tour game recently in Sydney at Romain Oval. And, yeah, he should be your natural backup seamer now that Ishan's not there and hence the third seamer. But whether he will get to play four test matches... it has to be seen, considering the fact that, I mean, there's too much to play around about how India goes with their bowling and what happens with the fitness of the fast bowlers across four test matches. So there could be a possibility that we might see Saini at some stage, but I think Umesh will definitely start.
Okay, now that we are here, we may as well discuss the team here. I thought we'll come to that later. But it makes sense to bring it all together, given the number of injuries that we have, given the various permutation combination. As we speak, just before we started this recording, there was news that Rohit Sharma is declared fit and he'll be flying in for the last two tests. So if you have to pick your 11 for the first test and the second test and the last two tests separately, what do you think will be the composition? Just go with your guesses.
I think... I'm still not sure about the openers. I mean, Mayank Agarwal should open, but I don't know about the second opener. Number 3, 4, 5 are locked in with Pujara, Kohli and Rahane. Number 6, again, I'm not entirely sure. Wicketkeepers are given from what happened, who played in the practice game. Bowling attack,
Sorry, did you say wicketkeeper is a given? Because it's quite a controversial topic in India.
Even before we come to Saha, the fact that this Indian top order is extremely flimsy at the moment, after having lost Rohit Sharma, I mean, come to think of it, to tell Rohit Sharma as an opener is something that people never imagined. In recent times, I don't know, Mahesh might have a view on it, but the fact that he's been really successful and that we are going to miss him in the first two test matches. Makes it really hard for people like Prithvi Shah and Mayank and even Shubman Gill to put some really good performances. There's enough pressure there for them to go on. But I think I'd have to pick a left field and not go with Prithvi Shah, but with Shubman Gill because of his ability as such. I mean, you need stroke makers who are aggressive and looking forward to it. It's not that Prithvi Shaw doesn't, but there's a bit more to Shubman Gill than Shaw is what I feel. And somewhere I feel that it could be the breakout series that Gill is going to have, just like what Virat Kohli had in 2012. So yeah, I mean, I might go with Shubman Gill and Mayank at the top. The fact that, again, the middle order has been very, very flimsy and the fact that they've not scored runs in the New Zealand series gives too much to open up. Even though they have too much to open up, but they may still go with Pujara, Rahane and Vihari along with Kohli. But down the line, if someone like Vihari doesn't score much, then the team management might look at KL Rahul as an option. Otherwise, I think Pujara, Kohli, Rahane, Vihari are a shoe in to start off in Adelaide. And of course, Saha versus Pant is quite a story there. But I think that they would go with Saha, even though Pant scored 100 in Australia at Sydney the last time he played. That's the batting order.
So on Vihari, for instance, given that even if Gill doesn't play in the first test, he's very likely to come in for Kohli for the second test. I'm just assuming that they'll go with Prithvi Shaw because he opened in New Zealand and he was not too bad. And if that is the case, wouldn't they be tempted to play Gill straight away in the middle order because he's going to play the next test in the middle order anyway, and perhaps leave out Vihari because he may not find a spot when Rohit Sharma comes back?
I mean, if India are going to go with four fast bowlers for the Adelaide Test match, then Vihari gives you that spin bowling option. And he scored a 50 also, if I'm not wrong, in New Zealand at Christchurch. So there are more reasons for Vihari to be selected. It's got ahead of Gill. But I do get the point that having Gill to start off the test series and the fact that he might play in space of Kohli going forward, I think Vihari might still have that bowling option to go with for Kohli.
Now that you mentioned the four-man bowling attack, that makes me very curious to listen to the bowling lineup. What do you think is the bowling lineup?
Sorry, is Jadeja fully fit?
I don't think so, to be honest. I mean, these days, fitness communications is not the most straightforward, as we found out recently. But as far as I can see, there's no news. There's no confirmed news that he's fit to play.
Okay, yeah. Well, in that case, I'm not sure. Yeah. There was a time India could have played both Jadeja and Ashwin in a five-man attack. But as we all know, Ashwin's batting has gone down so much. So it's not really a viable option. But I think India would be safe and play probably Ashwin and the three seamers.
Yeah, as much as I want Ashwin to play the first test match, I don't see him to get in... Get a chance straight away this time around, because he's played a few first test matches and they've dropped him off straight away, including the recent New Zealand series. So I think they would probably look for Jadeja's fitness. And if Jadeja is not going to be available, they might think of having a four-pronged attack for fast bowlers along with Vihari. But that might lengthen the tail, which is the problem.
I think Ashwin took 6 wickets in the last Adelaide test, didn't he?
Yeah,
he bowled well in Adelaide and then subsequently he got injured, right? That was the reason why he couldn't play further part in that series.
Yeah, it was the adductor muscle injury and hence he didn't turn up for the next test.
But I think it'd be too much of a gamble to play four seamers, especially when, you know, Ishant is not being around. And like Rab mentioned, Ashwin also had a good test in Adelaide. And also, if you look at it, even though, you know, there's been a lot of controversy about Ashwin versus Jadeja, and in between, Shastri even threw up the option of Kuldeep being the first bowler and all that. But so far, India has traditionally gone with Ashwin as the first choice. And only when there's a problem of injury or whatever, they resorted to Jadeja. And because Jadeja did well in the opportunities that he got, they continued with him, let's say, in West Indies, for instance. And New Zealand was a bit of an odd thing in that sense. But traditionally, they seem to have gone with Ashwin as the first choice. I mean, that's the way I read it, at least. So who would be your fourth seamer if you have to go with four seamers, Anand?
If it has to be four seamers, then I'll go with Saini, if it has to be the four seamers. And yeah, even I would prefer to have Ashwin. So whether what I think and what might happen with this Indian team management might be really different. And that's what I see to happen this time around. So if it's going to be the fourth seamer, it could be Saini.
I'm still struggling to understand the concept of I think India playing with four seamers in Australia, but you never know. I would still go with Ashwin. I mean, in his defense, I think he bowled almost 90 overs in that Adelaide test, almost 90, I think. So I'm still probably guessing that it's going to be Ashwin, and then he's my preferred option as well.
If Ashwin was in plans for Indian team right now, then he should have been part of this pink ball test match, isn't it? This pink ball first class game or the warm up game that they're playing. He's not even part of it. None of the spinners are.
No, that's also because it's the only opportunity for those who played the limited overs formats to get some practice, right?
Yeah, I get that fact, but also the fact that if they want to test for Ashwin or Kuldeep, right? Because even if Jadeja's fitness is a concern here, this could have been an option for them to check out. They could have well rested one of the other fast bowlers for a while to see. The fact that Saini and Siraj and all are there. Siraj bowled well in the first warm up. There was chance that they could have looked at one of the spinners as well here.
Picking a team these days is not easy, right? That's Adelaide, and then for the rest of the series it's going to be different. So what are the tweaks that you think that you would want to see, and what do you think the management will be making?
I mean, I would want to see Ashwin play at least 3 test matches here, because off spinners have there's so much against off spinners in Australia. So with the fact that he's been a very keen student of it, and then he's had reasonable success as such across South Africa, England and Australia in the limited matches that he's played, I would love to see Ashwin play at least 3 test matches. So that is one thought that I would have to see in terms of selections, especially with Melbourne, Gabba and Sydney. So that is one. And then I'm looking forward to see Ridhiman Saha also given a longer rope to see, now that Rahane would also be captaining this. I mean, with Virat Kohli and Ravi Shastri, there's so much of chop and change that's been happening with the side that no one knows who's going to play the next test match despite scoring or not scoring. So hopefully guys like Saha and Ashwin might hopefully will get a chance with longer rope, given the fact that they haven't been on the right side of selections in recent times.
So who'll come in for Kohli? Rab, what do you think? Who will come in for Kohli for the second test?
If he's not picked for the first test, I would like to see Gill bat at number 4 or somewhere in the middle order. So he has an amazing first class average as well. And then he always looked like a player with a lot of time. Even though I didn't really get a chance to see him in long format as much, Indian domestic cricket. I would like to see him play, and given that India is a very strong team, these are the times that you probably want to bring in a youngster like they did with Kohli in 2011-12.
I mean, absolutely. If India are going to have a dream series here, then I think we might as well see the rise of Shubman Gill this summer.
And what happens after that? Let's say Shubman Gill plays in Melbourne and has a good test, and Rohit Sharma comes back. How's that going to create, how's that going to change the team dynamics?
I guess one of the openers might have a tough time, so it might not be a hard thing to drop.
Prithvi Shaw definitely his selection is hanging in balance, because he's got three innings now and he's not really made a mark. That said, even Shubman Gill hasn't scored plenty in the three innings that he's played in the warm-up games here. So if Gill clicks, then and if Rohit Sharma comes back, then there could be something hanging around Prithvi Shaw's neck.
And one thing to add, like traditionally, the way the Australian setup worked is that whoever performed well in one series, they will do the homework to the absolute T, and then they will try and contain that batsman, and that might take the focus away from the rest. I mean, you can just go back one series and back and back, and then you would see that pattern, like, focusing on Kohli after 2014, sort of, other than the Perth innings, they didn't really let him score too many runs. And I think the focus would be on Pujara in the dressing room a lot, and this might be an opportunity for someone else to put their hand up and have a really good series. It sounds a bit silly and too rudimentary, but it happens.
In fact, even Pujara's success was partly attributed to that, right? Because so much focus of the Australian team was on Kohli that they didn't realize that there was another great batsman in the team. So, it makes sense. Of course, not when you sort of make it a caricature, it doesn't, but at the surface level, it certainly does make sense. So if you have to, I don't know the state of the pitches at the moment. What kind of team combinations that you think you'll be going for, let's say between Adelaide, Melbourne, Sydney and Gabba? Is there a place for a spinner in all four grounds? Or do you think, Anant has already said that very likely he'll see a four-seamer attack in Adelaide. But is there a possibility that you could see a two-spin attack in Sydney? Is that even remotely possible? Or you think 3-1 is likely the combination for majority of the season?
It depends on the state of the game. I mean, if India... depends on whether India lead the series or not. I would still be tempted to play two spinners in Sydney because there's not going to be much on offer for the pace bowlers. And on top of that, again, it's a massive unknown with that, with the COVID restrictions on the shining. So I would be tempted to play two spinners, but at least for all four test matches, I'll definitely play a spinner and maybe two in Sydney. What do you think, Arnold?
Yeah, I mean, the spinners definitely will play a part in this series. And as you said, shining of the ball and the fact that the seamers will not have that luxury going after the day-night test match. There's definite possibility of a spinner to play. And I hope there will be a time in, like, say, the Sydney test match where we might have both Jadeja and Ashwin play. I hope there is some balance somewhere which can get both of them play together. It's not happened often. I don't think it's ever happened where India has played an overseas test match with two spinners. Even when we had Kumble and Harbhajan, we've just had to choose one of them. So it's going to be too much of a stretch of an imagination, I guess, to see two spinners to be playing alongside each other in an overseas test match.
Actually, Kumble and Harbhajan have played quite a bit. In fact, the Leeds test, they played together.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. There was a time when I don't know who was the coach. There was a time when they said, the team management said, they'll play our four best bowlers. It doesn't matter whether they're spinners or fast bowlers. So they did play Kumble and Harbhajan for an extended period at that time.
Yeah, and Leeds was supposed to be the test match where the ball was moving all around in the first day, wasn't it? And Sanjay Bangar had to play through. And still they played two spinners there.
Yeah, because Bangar was offering the third seamer option. And he did pick out a couple of wickets. But yeah, I mean, the larger point is very, very valid. To see two spinners playing for an Indian team might be tempting, but I don't know. Without Kohli, it might even happen. Who knows?
And another interesting point is there haven't been too many test matches at the Gabba in January, February. There was one against Sri Lanka in 2019, but I think that was a pink ball test. And before that, you have to go back to 1968 India tour of Australia, I think, for a January test match at the Gabba. And, this is going to be in January. Even in February, I think there was only one test match. Might have been 1933 or something. So this would be the first day test match in more than 50 years in January in Brisbane. At the Gabba. So nobody really knows how it's going to behave. And Shield games are, you know, it's too hard to judge things based on Shield games because the quality is, a lot lower than the international quality in Australia at the moment. So it's very hard to judge how Brisbane cricket's going to behave.
I mean, there's a bit of a question mark over pitch preparation at large, right? Even Melbourne, for instance, Melbourne actually has been hot and cold for a while now. I mean, even the last series where Bumrah took six wickets wasn't the best of wickets. But again, was it equally slow and low against New Zealand last year? I'm not sure. I think it was a little bit of a better wicket last year. So it's been hot and cold for a while. And you add the COVID-driven sort of under-preparation to some extent across all venues. That's going to be a huge unknown as well, right, going into the series.
Yeah, that's why I'm a bit hesitant to make any bold predictions. I mean, without COVID, I would be making like so many predictions, like as if I'm a Betfair consultant. But yeah, I'm being a bit reluctant because it's a lot of unknowns. And there haven't been games played in all the grounds for the Shield season as well. So like you said, it's just can't be too sure.
Yeah, I mean, with the lockdown that happened here in Melbourne, every light and every power switch and everything was switched off in MCG, which is like very much unthinkable given the fact that they play almost every weekend with AFL matches and then with BBL and the Shield games. So it's like very, very unusual for Test match to return to it at Melbourne for the Boxing Day, where everything's got to be really fresh and it's a start that no one would know how it is. But I think there's a lot of scrutiny that happened with MCG. The wickets were pretty boring cricket and they were not really result oriented and had nothing for the fast bowlers or the bowlers as such. I think Azhar Ali had a 250 and then Alistair Cook had another big knock with a double 100. And then this thing happened with Pujara and Kohli having runs. So yeah, last year I think Wagner was able to get some get some spice out of the wicket. So I think there should be something for the fast bowlers this time around. Given the fact that again the Indian batting lineup without Kohli is relatively weaker, and hence they might target to make a wicket that is friendlier for Australian fast bowlers.
Is it just me, or did it feel like Indian batsmen didn't play short balls as well as they would, you would expect them to play in the 2018-19 series? I almost felt like, the short balls weren't played as well. And I even felt that Nathan Lyon bowled reasonably well compared to his past performances, I would say.
Fair enough. Okay, then let's move on to the Aussie team, which to me is a lot more puzzling because, when the series was announced, I thought Steve Smith is back, David Warner is back, Australia at full strength, India is going to, have its hands full. And then subsequently, India were down Ishan Sharma and Kohli for majority of the series. It felt like a mirror image of the last series where India were going to miss two of their main players against a full-strength Australian team. But subsequently, the script has turned topsy-turvy. So I have no idea what's going to be the 11 for any of the tests. Rav, why don't you get started? What's going to be your starting 11 in Adelaide, given where things stand?
Well, I was going to say, based on, the backing up that Joe Burns got from Justin Langer and David Warner and stuff, I thought he was definite. Well, he made a duck again today. Bumrah got him out second ball. I don't know. His form has been terrible. He hardly made any double-digit score. But I'm still going to predict that he would play, especially with Warner missing. In an ideal world, I would like to have Khawaja play, but he's not even in the squad. And, it's worth noting here that he made a 140-something against a really strong South African attack in a day-night Adelaide test. Well, that was a while ago. And then even against England, I think he made a 50 and then another double-digit score. So Pukowski would have been the other opener, but again, his fitness is unsure. So it could be Marcus Harris. If he makes a big one, I think he's on 16, not out at the moment. If he makes a big one in this tour game, I think he will press his case. I'm not too keen to move Matty Wade to open, especially against the quality of Indian bowling lineup in a day-night pink ball test match. Number three, well, minus number four, Smith, given. Travis Head, I think, especially with Gillespie back in South Australia, I think Travis Head is probably going to have a pretty good summer. He was that sort of fringe player for my liking, but I think he's going to become a pretty decent player. Number six, Matty Wade, they're going to pick him, but ideally I would have liked to see Cameron Green. Last 2 years he's averaging 60-something, 66 or something in first-class cricket, 100 every five innings or something. He made those hundreds against pretty decent batting lineups. Decent bowling lineups. So, I think it's going to be Harris, Burns, Marnus, Steve Smith, Travis Head and Matty Wade. Although I would like to see two different players in the top six.
I mean, I don't know if you people heard about the fact that they're discussing of even Sean Marsh to make a comeback. Alan Border was talking about Sean Marsh.
Are you serious? Even Sean Marsh wouldn't be thinking of himself.
Sean Marsh has scored some runs
in good form.
He's been scoring some runs of late, so he's back into discussions at least. And who knows, this Western Australia connection with Marsh and Langer, you don't know if Marsh might come back with Joe Burns leaving Langer to scratch his head so much, right? So, but go on.
Sorry, you have to keep in mind that I think it was Alan Border who was the captain when they dropped Sean Marsh's dad, Jeff Marsh, when he was vice captain. I think Border got really upset, and so they're pretty good friends, so that might have something to do with it.
Yeah, so I think they might start with Harrison Burns, but this is word around the fact that they might pick Marsh as well. given the fact that Pokorski and Warner are both missing for injuries and concussion reasons. But yeah, Harris and Burns more likely to start. And then, yeah, I said Labuschagne, Smith, and then Travis Head. I mean, they're all sealing their spots. But I think the ones after that are going to be in the spots which might be really troubling for India. Cameron Green can come good. He scored runs already. Then there's Tim Payne. And then after Tim Payne, Pat Cummins, and with Hazelwood not around, possibly, I mean, there's possibility of that. And if Michael Nesser gets a chance, India has enough reasons to be worried with the lower order batting, which has been such a bugging thing for the Indian team in recent times. So who knows, there could be some runs from the Australian middle order, which might be a thing for India to contend with. But if they go that way, then yeah, so Green gives them a bowling option as well. Green, Payne, Cummins, Nesser, if Hazelwood is not there. And then, of course, there's Nathan Lyon.
Is that... sorry. Raph, what is your bowling? Yeah.
Well, I would like to see Cameron Green play as a specialist batsman, even if he can't bowl. I mean, to be honest, though, he hasn't really bowled much in first-class cricket in the last 2 years. I think he's averaging close to 40. I mean, he took 5 wickets in the last 2 seasons. So he's been, you know, so I would like to see him play even if he doesn't bowl. But although I think they made it clear that they want to get some overs out of him. So number 7, well, Tim Payne's going to be there. Bowling attack, I'm always going to be biased. I went to the same high school as James Pattinson. I've known him since, not known him, I've seen him play since he was in middle school. So I would always pick James Pattinson. And then although he's not as good as he used to be with the bat, I can still trust a good 30 or something out of him on any wicket. So I would play him at 8, Cummins 9. And I think Hazelwood should be okay to play, and then Nathan Lyon. I think it's not just my preference. I'm pretty sure that Australia would pick Pattinson if Stark's not available.
Right. I think Pattinson would get the nod out of Nesser if it's just one bowler swap. But in case of a backup, I think Nesser might still be the 12th man, and if Hazelwood isn't fit again, then they might go with Nesra. But I think even otherwise, Cummins, Pattinson, and Hazelwood is too hot to handle for a pink ball test match.
So, and what is your replacement pick when Warner comes back? Who goes out, and then Stark comes back? Who goes out?
They would have to manage Pattinson's workload anyway. He tends to break down, so I would imagine Pattinson will go out when Stark comes back. Depending on where they play, though. And Pattinson probably, he can't go by test record because he hasn't really played too many matches. But he has a pretty good record in Victoria, I think, at MCG. So you would like to see Pattinson there as well. Australia might even skip, not play him in Adelaide and keep him fit for Melbourne. Because, you know, he might be a lot more handy than Nesser or anyone else. With the pitch likely to be a bit flat. With the openers, it's just going to have to be whoever is out of form. Or if Joe Burns doesn't score any runs, you know, he'd probably have to make way for David Warner. But if both of them fail, or just both of them only perform equally well, then likely the younger guy would miss out, unfortunately.
I think they will go with the form of the batsman as they go along. There's definitely pressure on Burns, but I think they will take up each and every test match by itself and then see who gets the nod to play with Warner. So I think it's still a very open game for their batting order as well, especially the opening slot. Bowling slot is not as much, because even in the Ashes that they played, they kept rotating their fast bowlers a lot. So Australia is quite used to having a few fast bowlers play a test series as that. So I think Hazelwood would come in Stark, and then Pattinson would be the top 4 bowlers. And then if there's any more unavailability or injury, they might still think of Nesser. And of course, there's Green, who's going to have an option of the 4th seamer as well.
So just looking at the scorecard of the last series, some of the scorecards of the last series, it's like the Australian batting lineup has completely changed in a span of 2 years. Of course, part of the reason is because that lineup didn't have two of the mainstays for other reasons. But it seems to be an almost completely different batting lineup. And in between, they did try out some of the batsmen in against Sri Lanka as well. But it seems, I mean, for instance, while we talk about Warner and Smith missing out in the last series, also Labuschagne has since gone on to become such an eminent sort of important member of the team. In that sense, is there anything that we can draw from last series? I know India bowled beautifully. Indian bowlers are skillful and stuff like that. But isn't this essentially almost Indian bowling facing a very different batting lineup compared to the last? Is there anything that Indian bowlers can carry over from the last series beyond the confidence that they can bowl?
I think so. I mean, well, you could say that the Australian bowlers didn't. It's pretty much the same bowling attack. So they didn't have the runs to bowl with, but so maybe the pitches looked flatter than they were. But Indian bowlers did bowl really well. And it's almost like, as well as a bowling lineup could bowl in contemporary cricket. And batting lineup, it's not that much different besides the two, though, if you think about it, because Marnus, I know he's a different batsman, he's still there. I think Travis Head was playing the test matches. So if Marcus Harris comes back, I guess he's one of those who played as well. I think, Indian bowling attack would still fancy their chances against pretty much everyone except probably Steve Smith. So, I think Indian bowling lineup would do really well. I still think, I know it's probably cliche, but I think Marnus wasn't really tested last year. I think I still rate his performances in England, making those 50s better than the 100s he made in Australia. So we know that he's a very skillful player, but it's a next up in a step up challenge from what happened last summer. So it pretty much comes down to what the plans Indian bowlers have against Australia's number four. It's almost like the situation that Australian bowling lineups had against India, in the 90s against India's number four.
Okay, so now let's go into the tricky territory. I know, Rav, you didn't want to predict anything because there are so many unknowns, but we're still going to go ahead with the prediction. So how do you see the test series panning out? What are your predictions for results in all the four tests? I'm not going to ask for the series because each test has its own trajectory at the moment. Just go with each test.
I think Adelaide's going to be very tight, but I might give Australia the edge, being a home test. Melbourne and Sydney are going to be difficult. I think one of them is going to be a draw. Depending on Australia's bowling lineup, and as also, India will miss Virat Kohli as a batsman for sure. Although, he averaged 40 last season, but the season before series before he was amazing. I think, MCG, I'm leaning towards. I don't know. It's very difficult. It comes down to pretty much the number four. I'll probably say Australia again, and Sydney would be a draw. Brisbane probably, it's going to be tight. It sounds like I'm giving Australia the edge in all test matches. But if I have to guess the series scoreline, I'll probably go with Australia winning 2-1. It doesn't make sense. I just picked Australia as having an edge, three of the four tests and saying 2-1. I'm just struggling. I just, it's very hard to predict.
Okay, fair enough. But either way, it's 2-1 or 3-love or whatever. But you're at least reasonably on the side that Australia will win the series.
Yeah, I think so. It's a home series. Although they haven't played Test cricket in almost a year, they would start as favourites. And I don't think toss will make a massive difference as much as it probably did in the last few Test matches at MCG and SCG. But I can't really see Australia losing a test match outside of Adelaide. The reason why I say that outside of Adelaide, because it's going to be a low-scoring game. So, whoever gets on a roll in a really, really good session will probably likely win. I can't quite see Australia losing a test match in the other three venues. MCG and SCG would be pretty flat. To beat Australia at the Gabba, it has to be very, very special performance. But then again, India do have players who are capable of doing that. So you never know.
Okay, Anand, what's your pick?
I've got to go the Jaivant Lile way of predicting 4-0. I mean, as much as I want to see something special without the likes of having Kohli, Ishan Sharma, and even Rohit Sharma for a brief part of the series, I really fear that there is this high chance of India getting whitewashed here 4-0, just because of the sides and the quality of the sides and the players that we've got. One side struggling to get a set of openers intact, and then finding replacement for Kohli, and then there's the gap that Ishan Sharma that has to be filled on, and then the fact that, of course, the confusion around the spinners selection. There's so much that India has to grapple with. At the same time, Australia playing at home, having massive advantage with the fact that both Stephen Smith and Manas Labuschagne would be around, even though Warner might not be there for the first test. So there's so much for India to lose and Australia to win here, and it would take. I mean, stupendous effort. Say, I mean, someone like Shubman Gill has to shine up really big, and someone like Pujara might have to dream of making another big series like what he had the last time around. As long as the runs don't come, then it's going to be really, really difficult for India to keep up with the series. Yeah.
I would be really surprised if Australia won 4-0, because this is pretty much the same bowling lineup Australia had in 2018. I know they didn't have the runs behind them, didn't have the rest in between and stuff. I can't really see them bowling India out twice at MCG and SCG back-to-back, although there's a big gap between. I'll be really surprised. But yeah, like I said earlier, I can't see Australia losing, but at the same time, I can't see Australia winning all four test matches. But yeah, who knows?
I mean, if India has to draw or put up really good performance, I think it hinges big time on Pujara to play time as well as score runs with patience. I think that's where India's chances lie, because most of these guys are coming out of IPL and very, very less domestic cricket and warm-up games, right? And the fact that even if Rohit Sharma is going to come in, it's just going to come in straight away. There is no practice match straight out for him as well. So there's really very less preparation getting into the series. However, when you compare with that of most of the Australians, they played, many of them have played the Sheffield Shield games around as well, including Mitchell Starc. So they have some red ball cricket or pink ball cricket to go with along instead of what you see with this Indian team. So that's why I fear that we might have a 4-0 here.
Yeah, but I have to agree with Rav here that I don't see two out of two results between Melbourne and Sydney. One of them has to be a draw. I mean, it depends on what MCG pitch we get, but I'm assuming one of them will be a draw. And if India has to have any chance, it's probably on a flatter surface, either Melbourne or Sydney, where Bumrah and Shami, you know, can perhaps outperform the Aussie attack on a flatter wicket. And yeah, so I'm going with Adelaide for Australia, Brisbane for Australia, one draw, and perhaps Sydney for India. I mean, that's the outside chance of India winning a test. And just to throw in my usual Rohit Sharma bias, his fast, quick runs is also going to help accelerate the scoring on an otherwise flat wicket. So there's also the Rohit Sharma pitch I'm making here, which is part of every podcast in 91 All Out.
Let's play it this way though. If India are to win the series, let's think that India are winning the series, right? Then what all should go right for India to win the series?
Somebody should hijack Steve Smith and Mitchell Starc and Hazelwood and Pat Cummins.
I still think it's heavily reliant on Steve Smith. It's no disrespect to other players in the Australian team. He's just a level above the rest. And, he's done well in the last year, coming back from his 12-month ban. But you never know. Just, you know, someone like Bumrah or Shami just needs to, you know, get him out once or twice in the first test. And then create some doubts. He's a mentally tough player. But if Indian bowlers somehow manage to contain Steve Smith, there is a massive chance. I think the rest is pretty much an even field. If you take out Steve Smith now, I would give the series to India right now, even with Kohli not playing and Ishan Sharma missing.
There's David Warner also.
Even David Warner, I know he averages 65 in Australia, but his average is, I think, in the high 40s against India. Sort of progressively, they haven't played in. He hasn't played India in 6-7 years in Australia. So you never know. And yeah, and he's aged a bit. He had some trouble against lifting deliveries lately. And I know it's limited always, but it might be even more testing in red ball cricket. So yeah, I don't know. I just think it's a pretty much even keel if you take Steve Smith out of the equation.
Okay, I think with that, we've come to the end of our preview of a series that nobody seems to make good sense of. We don't know what teams, what 11s are going to play in what venue and what kind of pitches we're going to get. It's a bit of an unknown. There's never been a cricket summer like this before, and hopefully never another one like this. The world is ready to move on from COVID, and I hope cricket the cricket summer is the beginning of that. Okay, I hope you enjoyed the preview. Keep listening for more episodes. Thanks, Anand. Thanks for joining. Thanks, Rav, as always. Thanks for joining.
Thanks, Mahesh. And then I hope to see 1-1 at Brisbane. So all the best.
Thank you. Thank you, Mahesh. Thank you, Rav. It's great talking.
India have won the Test match. India have won the series.
They're going to get back for two. India are home.